This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is, well, not the radio. I want the air conditioning because the summer is here, which I love summer, but there would be a whole lot of road noise if I rolled down my window, so we're just going to use the air conditioning. It is episode 64. I know that because I looked it up on my iPhone. Not my iPhone, my Android. I used to have an iPhone. I looked it up on my Droid and I saw that it was episode 64 today on the website. And the reason I had to look it up is because I left my notes at home. Woo! It's been a busy week. Been a busy, busy week. And, in fact, it's fixing to get a little bit busier. I think I mentioned a couple of previous podcasts that we were ramping up for another project, and that seems to be formed up at this point. We have a working agreement as to what's going to be done, how it's going to be done, and how long it's going to take, and all that kind of good stuff. And we are hitting the ground running tomorrow. So that should be interesting. In other news, Clara, the grandbaby, is growing, and she seems to just be as sweet can be. So her mom, my daughter, spent her kind of first day alone with her today because we've been helping out and other people have been helping out just to sort of ease this transition. You know, it's a really good idea for new moms to just have a little help in those first couple of days to kind of ease them over any anxiety that we would have. And we've been really blessed to have several people helping out, and we've helped out some too as well. So I think that's all going very well. And haven't seen Clara for a couple of days because my son-in-law's parents actually did a quick trip down to see her for a little while, so we wanted to give them plenty of time to see her and plenty of space to see her. We didn't even have a chance to say hello to them this time because it was just a really fast trip. But we'll catch him the next time down. Anyways, I did leave my notes at home. Oh, other news. I am still working on the super secret project. I have finished my 30-day free trial of Autodesk Inventor. I was able to get it to the place where I ordered a 3D print, which is very cool. You can actually design something in Autodesk Inventor, and then you can just send it to this bureau, and they've got a printer that can actually print it in the real world. So it's pretty cool. Immediately when I saw it, I realized I had a bunch of redesign to do, but that's why you want to see it in the real world. And it's certainly a whole lot cheaper than cutting molds, and because those are thousands of dollars. So it's working out okay. There's still a tremendous amount of work to do, and there's still a lot of space between here and a product that actually works. But things are puttering along, and it's been a really, really good exercise. I think I've mentioned enough by now that you've been able to deduce it's made out of plastic, and it has three or four parts, I'm not sure which, that sort of fit together, and there are what are called snap fits together with it. And so it's, from an engineering standpoint, it's more complicated than anything I have ever attempted from an engineering standpoint, which is nothing. So, you know, it has been a challenge, but each step of the way, we're solving the problems and we're figuring out what needs to be done. So, you know, each step of the way, it's working out okay. So that's good. Tomorrow I do go buy my actual license for Autodesk Inventor, unless something drastic changes, and that will be a lot of money. But, you know, I was talking to my wife about it this week, and I said at this point, I really haven't found anything that seems like a deal breaker to me. Everything that stands in the way of me getting this to market at this point is just making a few mistakes and learning and continuing to move forward. So since it doesn't seem like there's anything that's a deal breaker here, the only reason that I wouldn't do this is money or fear or, as a friend said, pride. And that was his description of fear, because when he said pride, what he meant really was fear of failing. What will people think of me if I don't get this finished? And, you know, none of those are good reasons not to do something. And so even though I know there's a huge amount of distance between here and market, the fact of the matter is God's been good. He's been whispering to me. He's been helping me solve problems. And we're just going to keep moving forward until we can't move forward anymore. So I'm going to plunk down a lot of money tomorrow. But that's okay. I've set it aside, have it in savings. It's okay. Anyways, today's topic, as near as I can remember, since I don't actually have my notes, today's topic, as near as I can remember, is a walk to beautiful. My wife saw a NOVA program. I'm going to turn down the air conditioning just a little bit because it is making a lot of noise. My wife saw a NOVA program called A Walk to Beautiful, which was in part sponsored by the Fistula Foundation. You can find them on the web. And it was a very touching and moving television program. And I, as I was watching it, there were some takeaways that I got from it. And I thought, you know, I'm going to talk about that to my buddies. And I've talked about it to my friends this week. And I thought I'm going to do a podcast on that this week. In the program, Walk to Beautiful, it introduced us to several women from Ethiopia who live in the back country. The first woman that they introduced us to, I believe her name was Ehu, A-Y-E-H-U, and Ehu lived 6 hours from the nearest road walking because they don't have cars. From the nearest road, she lived 6 hours. and she suffered a sad problem. And that is when she tried to give birth to one of her children, she was in labor for a week. And after being in labor for a week, the child died. And she said the doctor came and removed the baby, cut the baby out in, I guess, it's sorry for the graphicness, but cut the baby out in pieces and extracted the baby from her vaginal uterus channel. And she said, and then she noticed that she was leaking, and she was leaking urine. And when the story picks up, she has been in this state for 6 years, constantly leaking urine. So if it wasn't bad enough that she lost the baby, now she has this situation. And the situation, of course, has accompanying social stigmas to it. There obviously is a smell. And her husband decided he didn't want to put up with that, so he told her to leave, and he married somebody else. She went back to her family. Her family, you know, it was too much for her to stay in the house, and so they built her a little shed, lean-to out back, out of sticks and twigs and other things that she could live in to at least protect her from the hyenas. And as we pick up the story, she's lived in this situation for 6 years. Thankfully, a friend soon appears who has had a similar problem and had lived in that situation for 10 years, and she tells her friend about a hospital in Addis Ababa, I think is the name. I don't have my notes. Addis Ababa, and she tells her friend, they can help you. You should go there. And Ehu is very concerned. First of all, it's a 6-hour walk to the nearest road. And then it's multiple hours to get to the hospital. And she's asking all of these questions. And what will they do? And how can they do this? And her friend is telling her they know They know how to do this. You need to go. Will you go? And eventually, Ehud says that she'll go. And there's conversations with her mother and those types of things. And her mother talks about how she doesn't really want Ehud to be living out in the back, but they just can't, with the situation, they can't have her in the house. And her mom comes and gives her some money to go, because obviously this is a very impoverished family, and they live way out in the woods. Not the woods, it's scruff land. And as they're saying their goodbyes, everyone's sort of tearing up, and her mom, it's all translated, but her mom tells Ehud, she says, "Focus your heart." And I thought, wow, that I like that. You know, she basically tells her, set your face towards this. Let's move. Go do it. Focus your heart. And so Ehud starts out, and she walks the 6 hours to the road where she's going to pick up the bus. She gets on the bus. It's very crowded. She's leaking urine. She's on the bus for 17 hours. She eventually makes it to the clinic, and when the story makes it to the clinic, they begin to describe what has happened to Ehud, and in fact, what has happened to many, many women in Ethiopia. The problem begins with the fact that the women in Ethiopia are the ones who do a great deal of the heavy labor when it comes to supporting the families. For instance, they have these large earthen jugs that they fetch water in. And from the time these women are 2 and 3 and 4 years old, they're set to the task of hauling water. Now, they obviously have different sizes of jugs, but that's part of their chores. They have to haul water. And one of the doctors at the hospital, or she's a liaison at the hospital, talks about the fact that by the time a given girl that she has standing beside her is 8 years old, she's lifting a jug that this liaison says, I can't even lift. And she's lifting this jug filled with water and carrying it. And because of the physical stress that the women are under, coupled with the fact that while they eat a good diet, there's not enough of it, all their energy goes into doing all these chores, and it doesn't go into growing. And so this liaison officer, who is 5'3", is literally head and shoulders taller than this 17-year-old girl. Add to the fact that these young women are married off very young, 9, 10 years old, 12, 14 years old, and part of their mission in life is to have babies. But they're too small to have babies and to successfully give birth in a critical percentage of the time. And so what happens is the baby cannot be birthed naturally, and the woman is way out in the bushland, and she's in labor, and she's expecting to deliver in 12 hours or so, and she doesn't. And like Ehud, delivery goes on for a week, 10 days, 5 days, day after day after day after day, and eventually the baby dies. Well, the problem is that every time there's a contraction, the head of that baby is being pushed down onto the pelvic bone, and it's sort of smashing everything between it and the pelvic bone. And what can happen is parts of the bladder can get pinned between there, or parts of the rectum can get pinned in there. And since they're pinned in there, the blood supply is cut off. And when the baby is removed, those pieces just fall out because they're dead. And now you have a fistula, a connective passage It's what fistula is. It's a connective passage. You have a fistula either between the bladder and the uterus, or between the rectum and the uterus, or you have a double fistula where you have both and there's constant leakage. And it's really a sad, sad situation, because it comes after a stillborn child, when the woman is grieving for her child. And it also comes with a huge social stigma attached to it. And these women are turned away at normal hospitals because, first of all, they smell, and second of all, it's not really life-threatening, and typically the hospitals in countries like Ethiopia are overrun with patients. And so these women live for year after year after year, and the estimates that were given on the NOVA program, it was something like 5% of women in the world deal with some sort of obstructive delivery where the child is stillborn. And they were saying, their estimates were that in Ethiopia alone, this had led to 100,000 women that have these problems with fistulas. So Ehud goes to the hospital. She's first of all amazed that there are so many women in this hospital that have had the same problem as hers. The hospital looks like it is a wonderful facility. They are specifically dedicated. It's called the Fistula Hospital in Addis Ababa. If you want to read about it on the internet, just put in Fistula Hospital Ethiopia or Fistula Foundation. The links will come up. I mean, it's really a wonderful, wonderful thing that they are doing there. And she comes to the hospital. They not only take care of her physically, but they help her begin to heal emotionally as well. And they do the operation. They're successful. I think they said in about 93% of cases. Sometimes there has to be a follow-up second and third visit, but they are successful in about 93% of the cases. There isn't too much damage, so that they are able to do the repairs, and then they can send the women back home, and they send them home with new brightly colored clothing. And I mean, it's like a resurrection, you know. Suddenly these women have new life. And as I was talking to one of my buddies about this week, I finished that story, and he looked at me and he said, "How are you going to do a podcast on that?" And I said, you know, when I was watching this thing, I thought, some people are going to immediately react and say, see, how can a God of love allow such suffering in the world? But what immediately impressed me about all of this is the great tide of free will that had brought Ehud to the point that she was at. We like to think, I have free will, I'm in my life, I get to decide what I'm doing, my choices matter. But the fact of the matter is that our free will is never an isolated occurrence. The choices that we make are made because of a huge wave of choices that were made before us, and the choices that we make add to that wave of choices as they pass over us and move on to the people around us and to our descendants. You know, there's really nothing that I did in my life to decide that I was going to be born in America, that I was going to be born to parents who loved me, who were missionaries, who took me around the world and gave me an amazing set of experiences, who showed me what it was like to rely on the supernatural, who showed me what it was like to hear the voice of the supernatural within and respond and watch things work out day after day after day. I didn't choose that. My parents made a decision to have a child, and I am the inheritor of that decision. My grandparents' family on my mom's side made a decision. The Ragusos, my mom is full-blooded Italian. The Ragusos decided for generations that they were going to practice genetic engineering before there was even a term. And whenever the man came home or the woman came home on a date with someone as a potential spouse, the Raguso clan would grill him. So is he strong? What kind of family does she come from? Are they sickly? They made all of these decisions about trying to make the best choices. I'm getting my mail. For who would marry whom within the Raguso clan. And frankly, I am a beneficiary of all those choices. Because when you look at some of the things that come back on my test results in terms of my cholesterol levels and all those kind of things, I had a doctor once looked at my blood test and he pointed to a number. I think it was my HDL, which is the good number, and it was high, which is good. It's supposed to be. And he pointed to it and he said, "That's genetics." He said, "I work like crazy watching what I eat, exercise, all that kind of stuff." And he said, "I'm not even nowhere near that number." But see, I am inheritor of all those decisions that came before me. And when I was talking to my buddy, one of my buddies about this week, he said, "You know, my wife and I were having this same conversation." He said, "Both of our parents, both of our fathers," I'm backing into my garage, said, "Both of our fathers were scheduled to be overseas during World War II. One of them was scheduled to go over in the big Normandy invasion, and because they had a bad inoculation or because some other things didn't work out, they ended up not going over in World War II and not participating in that huge invasion where many people were killed. And because there were these cascading decisions, if they had been made a different way, potentially, you know, they could have been killed. They wouldn't have had any progeny. I wouldn't be sitting across from my friend." I mean, we are just awash in these decisions. And God has made a world where he values free will. And because he values free will, he will not immediately step in and stop things from happening, but he allows us to participate through our free will to bring about change. And so when I look at Ehud's situation, I realize that there's nothing I've done that would give me any reason that I should be born in America as opposed to being born in Ethiopia in the backwoods country as a woman being in exactly the same situation that Ehud is in. So I shouldn't really get too puffed up with pride over those things. But just like I really don't have any control over the blessed... let me back up. Just like I really didn't have much control to be placed in the blessed situation I was in, Ehud didn't have much control over being placed in the sad situation that she was in. But here's something that is the same between both those situations. Now that we are in those situations, whether good or sad, whether filled with life or filled with destruction, the solution is the same. And the solution is free will. Because no matter what the situation is, free will offers the potential of changing the situation, of ameliorating the situation, of bringing about a difference in the situation. And free will is the only way it will happen. That's why it was really wonderful to watch Ehud's friend come, because she had to walk quite a ways to get to Ehud. But she made a decision that she would walk those miles to Ehud. And then Ehud had to make a decision that she would go to the hospital, or she would have still been sitting in her makeshift hut waiting for death. But she made a decision to go to the hospital. She did what her mother told her to do. Focus your heart. Focus your heart. And in my situation, whatever is happening around me, I have a choice every day of deciding what I'm going to do and deciding how I can make that situation better. Because I can look. Just a second. See you, sweetie. Bye. Have fun at church. I need to wrap this up. I'm in my garage. My wife is leaving to go to church. Anyways, the crux of the matter is that it's all about the free will. We can look at our situation and we can get puffed up about how great our situation was. But the fact is, there were a lot of things that we didn't decide that got us to that situation. But there are also certainly some things that we did decide that helped perpetuate the situation. And if we make the right choices, we can not only perpetuate that situation for ourselves, but we can perpetuate it for our progeny. But just like there's that side of it, there's also the other side of it, that if you are at the end of a chain of less than wise decisions, whether they're yours or the decisions of the people who have come before you, the really great thing about this life is that you can, at any time, decide that it's time to make better decisions. All you have to do is what Ehud's mother encouraged her to do. Focus your heart. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.